Welcome into Fantasy Focus Football. It is Friday, August 18th. Today's show is presented by Geico. Switch to Geico, see all the ways that you can save. My name is Daniel Dopp, joined by my best friends, Mike Clay and Field Yates. It's so great to see you guys.
I was a little nervous that you were going to say, joined by my best friend, Mike Clay and Field Yates.
Yeah, he already introduced you, and then he said, best friend, Mike Clay, and I was like, and then he added you, and you realized it while you were speaking, didn't you?
While I was speaking. Definitely not. No way. Okay. I knew it was coming.
You were like, if I say this out loud, Field might like side-eye me and this might get awkward. Guys. Even if how I feel is that Mike Clay is my singular best friend and Field is just a friend. We can cover that up on the podcast.
We are the three best friends that anyone has ever had is the way that I look at it.
We're the three musketeers. I think kind of an underrated candy bar.
Oh, a super underrated candy bar.
Yeah, solid.
I love three musketeers.
Mike is like, what are the Three Musketeers bar?
What are candy?
I
just take creatine and protein and get jacked, and I don't eat that junk. I don't eat that garbage.
I went to Costco yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And they already have
my favorite place to shop.
All of the Halloween candy out. I tried so hard to get a box of the full-size candy bars, and Rosie was like, it is not close enough yet.
Daniel,
you're going to have to hide them in the house. They're going to be gone by the time the Halloween gets here.
This happened to me a month ago.
Really?
In July, I was at a local pharmacy. And there was a full wall of Halloween candy. And perplexed and perhaps offended that I tweeted about it. It's preposterous. We live in Connecticut.
Yes.
We get like, I don't know, 3 good months of weather all year.
Yep.
Halloween is crisp, cool air. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be thinking about that crisp, cool air when it's 92 degrees out in July.
That's fair.
Can we just wait another month?
Just a little longer.
Yeah, you really think I have the discipline that if I go buy a box of candy now, a whole box, that it's going to last for another 2 months and 2 weeks?
No.
Not a chance.
Nope.
It'll be gone by Sunday.
Yeah.
I think it's acceptable once the season starts. Like once week one
kicks off. Once the football season starts?
Yeah, once the NFL season starts, that's acceptable.
Why?
Right?
How come once football season
because
starts?
Because it feels like fall when football starts.
It feels more like fall. Okay, I'll grant you that, but July was too early.
Oh, July is way too early.
Yeah.
I agree 100%.
All right, good.
That's a no-brainer.
Like, if you have a child whose birthday is in late July, feel free to buy all that Halloween candy because I guarantee you it will not last past that birthday party, but any sooner than that, it has to be like, just get me to at least like mid-September. I'll have 6 weeks to buy my candy for Halloween.
I saw reports that the Costcos in the Seattle area are already devoid of all the candy boxes. They've been bought up by someone that we don't know of in the Seattle area. It was supposed to be a DK Metcalf joke. Didn't land. Sometimes it doesn't land, guys. You do what you can.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about a lot of things on the show today here, Field.
Yeah.
We got a little bit of news, not really a whole lot. And we're diving into the NFC South in case you have not caught any of the rest of our divisional breakdowns. Check back for the rest of this week. We've been going through every single division. Lot to be able to talk about here. Really quickly, though, off the top from a news perspective, we got news last night. Joe Mixon was found not guilty of menacing, obviously a very serious offense, something that we've been waiting to figure out how he is going to be a part of this offense or not a part of this offense. If he had been found guilty, obviously we'd have a bigger conversation if he were to miss time. But as of right now, it doesn't feel like there's going to be anything that will change Joe Mixon's value for us in fantasy. I just wanted to mention that really quickly.
Yeah, sometimes feels a little silly to be talking about fantasy football in the context of a person
like
who
that
was in court yesterday. But if he had been found guilty, I think there's a pretty legitimate chance that Joe Mixon could have faced some sort of NFL punishment, whether it was imminently or at some point down the line. The fact that he was found not guilty certainly reduces that possibility. Joe Mixon, a player we've talked about a bunch on this podcast over the first 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, that aside, just in terms of looking at that depth chart, if something were to happen to Joe Mixon injury-wise, very unclear behind him anyway, right? There's no like
Chase
answer
Brown
to who
question
you
mark?
Add.
Yes. Yeah. Evans question mark?
Travion Williams question mark?
Yeah, there we go.
So here's the good news. We've covered our bases. If something does happen, one of us will be right.
Yes, that's right.
That's what we try to do here on
that's
the Focus.
Right.
Nailed it. We'll just cut that 1 second of each of us saying that.
Very apprehensively.
That's so good. All right, let's dive in. We got a bunch of fun stuff to talk about today.
We do. But before we get to the division.
You're right.
So
BLG,
really cool
fault.
Thing. So we've talked a lot about fantasy football for many years and how much it means to us. And it means something to us professionally. It is our job somehow that we get to talk about fantasy football every single day. But it's something that has become our profession because we have all long loved it for many different reasons. A big part of that is the community. You know, I play in a league with my high school buddies and my college buddies and work friends and people that don't live anywhere close to me, people that live in my neighborhood. It covers a lot of different bases.
Oh, yeah.
We have always appreciated the people that have reached out and shared their love story for fantasy football. And last year, you guys may recall, my cousin who lives in Kentucky set up a Kentucky Flood Relief Fantasy League. Yep. And they did great work. Shout out to Griffey, raising a bunch of money. At some point towards the end of the season, he got an email that he forwarded to me from a gentleman named Shane Burns. And I think that Shane has an incredible story that we have heard similar things from other veterans in the past. And Shane is a veteran. Shout out to all of our veterans that have served our country so nobly. And, you know, he was, as many do, many active members do, they experience some difficult times. It's the one of the most, it's the simultaneously one of the most heroic and perhaps traumatic things that any individual can do in life. And Shane talked about how fantasy sports, baseball and football, but more recently football, really had helped sort of get his life back on track. And I was so touched by Shane's email. And he participated in the Kentucky Flood Relief League last year. And he's a huge Saints fan, has been playing fantasy football for a long time. So I said, you know something, Shane, this got me something thinking. We need to do a veterans league this year, a fantasy football league through the Fantasy Focus that is made up of veterans. Daniel, of course, a veteran of our country. We talk about that every year during Veterans Day, something that, you know, for as much success as Daniel has had in his post-serving time, like the most noble thing Daniel ever do, most important thing he'll ever do is being a veteran of this country. So we want to get you involved. If there are veterans out there that love fantasy football that are listening to this podcast right now, we want you to be a part of this Veterans League.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly how many people we can fit into this league. We might get way more submissions than we can accept, but here's what we're looking for. If you want to be a part of this league with Shane and Daniel and maybe Mike and I, TBD, depending on how many applicants we get, do me a favor. Email me at field@fantasyfocus.org. Yep. We all have access to this email, so we'll see it. In the title, mention, you know, Veterans League application or something to that effect, and tell us a little bit about you. We would love to hear a little bit about your story, and we'd love to make this happen. Obviously, the season's, what, 20 days away from starting, so we'll get things rolling here pretty soon, but we hope this is a cool opportunity for people that have done something incredibly powerful and important to our country and now appreciate fantasy football. So, again, field@fantasyfocus.org. Try to make sure to include something in reference to the Veterans League in the subject. And we're going to see how much interest we get. Yep. And if we get a whole lot more than one league, then maybe we'll find something else, whether it's, you know, a pick'em pool or something like that that we can integrate everybody into. But we're looking to at least one Veterans League. And if we get a ton of interest, we'll find a way to make other people whole and happy as well.
I love it. I love it, Field.
Great. Right. Seriously, idea. Let's do it.
This is the thing. Fantasy is just always so much fun. Being able to get in those leagues, it doesn't make a difference if you know everybody. There's just this camaraderie of, like, we have this shared experience. Mm-hmm. We love being able. I'll tell you what, after the podcast yesterday, Mike Clay, I immediately texted in the Michigan men group that we have because the podcast is a big thing.
Yeah.
I let them immediately know. Mike Clay said that Jared Goff is going to be Blake Bortles. I let them know that David Montgomery is running back 29 and that the Lions, in fact, will not win the division. I just want you to know there was a lot of stuff that wasn't said in there, but what I can say is fantasy football is thick with all of our fans. I'll tell you what. We're not a lot of Mike Clay fans here, but I'll...
So I'm not going to the Detroit Lions.
You're not
going
to come
year.
To the... No, we're not going to do the Michigan show this year.
Okay, well, the NFL draft is in Detroit next year. So not they all the want us to do a show at the draft, which... That's probably above our pay grade, but
how fun would that be?
We're going to work like crazy to try to make that happen.
Absolutely.
Right, I need a security team for that. So,
wow. Of course. Of course, Mike has become a diva already. Yeah, it's like, I don't know how this works.
No, I need it because you're setting
to protect
me up for
him
failure.
From the buddies. Yeah.
I'm going to get sandwiches thrown at me by Detroit fans.
They have names.
Wiz or Wiz without?
Yes, without. Do with
without. Wiz without.
You know what that means? I know it's a Philly thing.
Of course I do.
Mike, literally the Phillies were in the World Series last year, and you were like, what's baseball?
Well, that's true.
That's a different.
But it's food. Like, food I have covered.
Food is different.
Food,
you know.
Food to food.
You know.
I got that nailed down.
All right, now we're going to dive into the NFC South. Not a very good division here, guys. I just got to be honest about this. I was looking through Panthers, negative point differential. Falcons, negative point differential. Saints, negative point differential. Bucks, negative point differential. What's a tough one here?
You know the old saying, we saved the best for last?
Yeah, that's
we did not do that in this case. Sorry.
No, we did not. All right. The Carolina Panthers obviously have Bryce Young now starting for them under center field Yates, but I want to start with Miles Sanders, a guy that was fantastic last year in Philly with Jalen Hurts. Something to remember, he was sixth most, he had the sixth most goal-to-go carries, 11 rushing touchdowns. Field, I looked at Miles Sanders' Madden stats before we started the show so I could know if I was supposed to say good things or bad things about him.
It's very Tyreek Hill of you.
A little bit Tyreek Hill. But tell me why you think maybe this is not as negative of a situation for Miles Sanders going from Philadelphia as it seems to a Carolina Panthers offense.
Yeah, so you and I are six slots apart on Miles Sanders in our running back rankings, which is a fairly significant gap that high up on the board.
Yep.
I'm finding myself perhaps more optimistic than many in the industry on Miles Sanders. Let's just start with a couple of baseline criteria. He's a good football player, right? Second round pick, a guy who was the Eagles' leading rusher last year, a guy who was a big part of a team that made the Super Bowl, and it wasn't some fluke that he was as successful as he was last year. He goes to Carolina in this offseason in what was an extremely dry market for running backs. Got a real four-year, $25 million contract. This was a real investment by Carolina early in free agency. And Carolina is very notable. He reunites with Frank Reich and Deuce Staley, who were the offensive coordinator and assistant head coach / running backs coach when he was in Philadelphia as a rookie. So all these things are important. Let's talk about the situation in Carolina. An offensive line that is expected to return all five starters from last year once a couple of guys get healthy. Yeah, this is a team, good offensive line, by the way, that was the 10th best rushing attack last year. It actually got better once Christian McCaffrey got traded.
They were sixth in rushing yards by running backs after the trade.
Yep. So they were really effective running the football last year. Obviously, with the new staff, it's going to be a new system. But I wanted to establish the baseline that this is a good player playing with a good offensive line. It's got a lot of continuity. Not a theme across most offensive lines in the NFL. And I know this is the thing that probably will separate where Mike and I see him, but 50 catches as a rookie for Miles Sanders. He's capable of catching the football, right? He's not Christian McCaffrey. He's not Austin Ekeler or one of those types of players. But I think last year's utilization as a receiver was much more reflective of Kenneth Gainwell being there. The Eagles throwing the football as infrequently to running backs as any offense in the NFL. And the fact that I mean, just really those two factors, to be honest with you, more than anything
Jalen
else.
Like if Jalen Hurts, he's not going to dump it off.
He's just going to be tuck and run, right? Or he's going to have design runs.
So exactly.
He goes to a system playing with a quarterback that is not much of a runner, who is an excellent distributor, where I think they're going to pretty heavily involve Miles Sanders here. There's 288 carries vacated between Christian McCaffrey and Deontay Foreman. I keep thinking to myself, there's a pretty darn big workload. I think he's going to catch the football enough behind a good offensive line, playing with a rookie quarterback that maybe, and I think sometimes this stuff gets a little bit too anecdotal, maybe the formula for Carolina early will be to try to play really good defense and maybe lean on that running game early in the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of meet in the middle of you two guys on this one because to your points, all fair. He is going to a solid offensive line, but one that's certainly inferior to what he had in Philadelphia. Also, offense, we don't expect to score nearly as many points this year as Philadelphia did last year, especially with a rookie quarterback. But I will say this. My main concern with Sanders is, I mean, first of all, his receiving efficiency the last 3 years has been atrocious, arguably worst at running back. Yards per target-wise, it is dead last among 73 qualified running backs over the last three seasons. So that does concern me a little bit. I do think his targets will go up. But here's the thing. My ceiling is my concern. Since he was drafted, he is first in rushing EPA per carry. He is fifth in yards per carry. Last year, he was fifth in the NFL in rushing yards. Guys, he finished 15th in fantasy points. That's a career high. That's his best season
last
ever.
Year.
With that elite efficiency, with all those touchdowns, with the fifth most rushing yards, he was 15th, and he's never beat that prior to that. In great Eagles offenses at times in Philadelphia. So where is the ceiling? Can he actually get past that in an inferior offense? That's what bothers me. And I do think his targets will be up with Bryce Young instead of Jalen Hurts. But to what extent? I don't think it's going to be a substantial boost in targets in this offense. So
maybe what I'm hoping for
19, 20, right in that range.
So what I'm hoping for is that this is the first time in his career where he gets like true workhorse running back carries with enough passing game utilization, right? Because as a rookie, when he had those 50 catches, he had just 179 carries. Mm-hmm. If that number jumps to 230, which that's less than, that's right around 15 per game, and he gets four targets a game, then we could be talking about a guy who slots in is like every single week, 15 to 20 in our running back rankings.
Sure. Yeah. I like Miles Sanders this, and for like everything you said, Field, I don't disagree with it. I think where I have him as running back 23, he's still a startable RB2 for me. If you leave your draft with him as your RB2, I'm fine with that. Part of the reason why he's a little lower for me since entering the league, he leads all running backs in yards before first contact. That Eagles offensive line did him a lot of favors on top of him being really good. So like Mike said, we don't expect that offense to be quite as good. So because of that, a little bit less touchdown efficiency, maybe a little less running efficiency. That's the only reason why. But if he outperforms any of that pass catching usage that he has not done the last previous years, he could boom up this list, Field.
He feels like one of them. Every week, boring, solid RB2s.
Correct. He's exactly younger than James Conner, like. Right? And the other thing I'll say is, in James Conner without catching James passes. I think he's going to catch.
I think it'll be
45 or 50 passes this year. And I'm big on checking right now, like on my RB2s, like who has legitimate competition behind them. And Chuba Hubbard's probably the next man up. And he's fine. He had some moments last year, but I don't think he's a real threat to take over a guy that they just made this $25 million over a four-year investment in.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been some Raheem Blackshear obvious passing situation workload, sort of. Sure. Kind of like you referenced Gainwell. Could steal some targets and be annoying for Sanders, people that have Sanders, but again, nothing that's a clear option like this guy could steal the job. There's like no one on the team that can do that.
All right, so obviously Miles Sanders, someone that we could draft for our fantasy team. Is there anyone else, Mike Clay, on this Panthers roster that you even are you? Let me say it this way instead: are there any wide receivers that are worth potentially late round flyers?
Yes,
in fantasy drafts.
I think all three are fine because any one of the three could be the number one. Whoa. And when you're at that point in your draft. And I should say which three, right?
I was just going to say that, yes.
I guess some people could take LaVisca Chenault. I guess that could still
happen. Terrace Marshall, Jonathan Mingo?
DJ Chark's my favorite, MF 51. Adam Thielen, four spots lower. Jonathan Mingo is the second-round rookie who could be the number one. Any of those three guys could be that primary target. I've seen reports that Thielen looks like his top guy early on. I think that at his age 33 and in a short range as a short-range target, limited upside. Chark, who led the NFL on average depth of target last season, could be the clear-out guy and have some kind of boom games, a bunch of boom games this season, maybe a better DFS option. So Chark's my favorite. I think he's just the best player in his prime. But again, I mean, Mingo is a second-round pick, 4-4, six wheels at 6'1", 220. Not the best quarterback play at Ole Miss, but he made some plays. So he's an interesting name to watch. Again, you're not going to start all three. You probably won't start two. But the question is, which is the one that could sneak into flex or wide receiver three value? That's what late round picks are for. Throw a dart at these guys.
This offense reminds me a bit of the Patriots in 2021 with Mac Jones in his rookie season, right? Like, they've got a bunch of guys who I think are okay to solid. Mm-hmm. It may be, though, that like rather than one of these players emerging, it's Mingo has four or five games as a lead receiver. And Adam Thielen has maybe six or seven. And maybe there's a handful of games where DJ Chark has the most points. Maybe even Hayden Hurst has a moment here or there. It's just going to be really difficult for us to ascertain week in and week out who we expect that to be.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move ahead. We're going to talk about the Falcons next. Last year, they were 7-10, negative 21-point differential. Actually, everything you said about the Carolina Panthers, maybe they take a page out of the Falcons' book. Like you said, Field, they try to run the ball a whole bunch. They try to be able to play really good defense because the South, it's pretty weak. Let's talk about Bijan Robinson. This is the guy that everybody's excited about in this offense. Actually, I'm excited about all three guys in this offense. They have three incredible skill position players. It's going to start with Bijan at the running back position. The most hyped running back coming out of the draft in the last 5 years, 10 years, Field Yates. Talk to me about this Bijan hype.
I mean, the Bijan hype is real with one caveat that we'll discuss in just a little bit. So let me leave that off to the side here for a second.
Okay.
Try to find a hole in his game. You'll be searching for a long time. Bijan Robinson is the real deal. This guy is an incredible runner. He had 19 catches last season for Texas. That's not reflective of the skill set that he has as a receiver. Oftentimes in college, guys who are super talented pass catchers just run the football a ton because it's like five-star you, right? They're just running past defenses, and Texas's offense did not need Bijan Robinson to be exclusively a receiver for him to be an awesome part of their team. He was the real deal from start to finish at Texas, checks every box physically. He's got incredible measurables, ran fast at the combine. You've seen all the hype and the highlights so far this preseason. Eighth overall pick for a team that was the run-heaviest or second-run-heaviest team last year, Mike?
They were run-heaviest. They were
52% of their called plays.
They led the NFL in running back rushing yards as well. So the run heaviest scheme.
Yeah. Run heaviest scheme with the most running back rushing yards last season. In so many ways, this feels like a dream scenario for Bijan Robinson. There's one caveat here, and I am not buying into this caveat yet because I have Bijan Robinson as a top four running back. I'm all in on me. We are all, I think, all in on Bijan Robinson. Have him as a first round pick. I got him ninth in the mock draft on Tuesday. Felt like that was a great value. Here's the only thing that I think people are nervous about, and I'm not going to lie to you. Sometimes it's tough for me to ignore.
He's never going
to
tell us.
I know. I've been thinking about this. I've been waiting. The anticipation is killing me.
I know where it's going, but he won't tell us.
We'll be back after your 7 live reads. Yes. So, no, more seriously, it's that this is an offense that over the past 2 seasons has not maximized elite talents. Mm-hmm. 4th and 8th overall pick in Kyle Pitts and also Drake London. Yep. And I'm not sure that any coach subscribes to coach speak more than Arthur Smith, the Falcons head coach. But he's been talking about things like, yeah, you know, Tyler Algier is going to have a role. We're going to play the hot hand, things like that. I'm really, 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 really praying that actions are very different than words. Because if this team invests the 8th overall pick in a running back with all the needs they had, and I've said this before, and all the players available in this past draft, mm-hmm. and they use Bijan Robinson as part of a committee, it's a failure the second it takes place. Mm-hmm. So that's the only thing that I'll introduce. I am banking on that not happening. I've got him as a top 4 play.
Yeah, and my point here kind of relates to that, which is that Tyler Algier is going to have a role. And that's okay. They averaged 27 running back carries a game last season. If you just give half of those to Bijan, that's already, you know, 14, 15 carries.
Sure.
On top of a substantial receiving role, we know that's going to happen, right? 4, 5, 6, 7 targets a game.
Yep.
That's enough to be a strong RB1, especially if you're at that level of athlete that Bijan Robinson is. So, yes, Tyler Algier will have over 100 carries. Maybe he easily crushes that, and that's okay. Bijan will still be an RB1. The other point here is that, again, I have hammered this stat home all season long because the other pushback is, how can I spend a first-round pick on a rookie?
I got never done it before, played. Right?
Okay, and the only pushback to that, again, I've drilled this into the ground, but I'll say it again. All 6 running backs that have been drafted top 10 since 2011 have finished top 10 in fantasy points as a running back. Saquon Barkley, Trent Richardson, Zeke Elliott, Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, and Todd Gurley. All 6, 100%. Over the last decade, these teams take guys in the first round or in the top 10, top 15. This applies to Jamar Gibbs as well. They use them a lot, and they're super productive in fantasy every single time.
If you're in a debate with somebody and you're debating a rookie and his fantasy value, and that person wants to use the fact that that player has not done it before as part of their argument, you can immediately say, I win that argument. Like, do we not see rookies dominate?
Right.
Not just amongst rookie running backs in fantasy football.
Yeah.
Like, do we not see what happens all the freaking time? Like, Micah Parsons, the day he stepped on the field for the Cowboys, after taking a year off from football because of the COVID year, he was an unbelievable player, right? Like, Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, like, these guys come in and absolutely mash. Like, it's one of the dumbest arguments that I hear fairly frequently in fantasy football discourse. So the next time somebody comes at you and says, well, he hasn't done it before, you just tell that person, you can just get up, you carry like a little stamp with an L stamp, which I'm sure everybody carries stamps. You just put it right on their forehead. And you just say, I win. That seems reasonable, right?
I like that feel. There's nothing wrong with that. I will say this about Bijan. I feel.
Don't you dare.
No. There's nothing negative.
Oh, okay.
I've been talking with Mike Rothstein a bunch because he's obviously our Falcons NFL Nation reporter. He is convinced that they are going to use both Bijan and Tyler Algier a fair amount. They're not going to go away from Tyler Algier, but he will be used, Bijan, as a heavy pass catcher in this offense. I don't know. I need to see 300 touches, Mike. Is he going to see 300 total touches this year?
He could push for that. In this high-volume offense, they're going to run this offense through the running backs and the running game, and when they throw it's going to go to 2 guys. Remember, Kyle Pitts was 2nd, and Drake London, I believe, was 4th or 3rd at wide receiver and target share last season.
Yep.
When they throw, it goes to 2 guys, and it'll go to a 3rd guy, Bijan, now. But there's going to be so much volume in the running game. And by the way, we're going to get to this. I want to get into this more when we get to the Saints. This division, you could argue, has the easiest, 2nd easiest, 3rd easiest, and 4th easiest schedules in the NFL this season.
That's wild. Really?
Wow. Yeah, you can dive them all in the top 5. It's a very light slate for this division.
I don't want to dismiss this name because I think people who listen to this podcast know we love him. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure what the Cordarrelle Patterson role is. I hope that it's more receiver than running back this year. That's all I'll say.
Who's their number 2 receiver right now?
He probably is, right?
Who is? Matt Collins.
Who is? Okay.
He's there to block. He's going to be blocking. So, yeah, they have major. He's, you know, receiver.
More like a sixth offensive lineman than a second wide receiver, yeah, Matt Collins this year.
I have to imagine. Jacked. That's why they targeted him, I feel like, to be the number two. And we've seen that from offenses before, that a clear run-heavy offense brings in a starting receiver yep. to play a bunch of snaps and have that specific role of blocking. Sometimes it's a clear-out role, like Marquez Valdes-Scantling was in Green Bay and was in Kansas City last year.
We call the air yards god, right?
The Saints famous for that with guys like Devery Henderson.
Yeah,
and
Robert Meacham. Oh,
they'd
my
have,
God.
They'd have like, they'd be like second in snaps at receiver, but yeah. like 45th in targets. Right. It's a role. It really is.
Yeah. All right. Let's keep moving on. We're going to talk about Kyle Pitts. You said that this was an offense that's going to run through these running backs. We've been trying to make Kyle Pitts happen. It sort of happened his rookie season. Let's be honest about that.
It absolutely did.
Yeah, I mean, it happened through the receiving yards. It didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't get the touchdown equity I was looking for from a guy that was drafted number three overall. But when I'm looking at Kyle Pitts, we're still talking about him sometimes like he's a superstar because he is a unicorn and he is still so young, Mike. But there are reasons why we don't have him listed as the top three tight end that he was. Give me both the pros and cons for drafting Kyle Pitts this year.
Yeah, the low-volume passing game with a very suspect quarterback situation. We don't know if Desmond Ridder can do it. I mean, he had, four starts last year. He threw two touchdowns, and they both came in week 18 against the Bucs backups.
Right.
So he threw against starting defenses. He had zero passing touchdowns. That's a concern. Also, and again, they're going to run the ball so much. It just what is his ceiling in terms of volume? And he hasn't had that full season yet where he's put it all together in terms of yardage and the touchdowns. Last year, actually, 10 games, only had two top 12 fantasy weeks. So I still believe in the talent. I'm still out on him as a mid-range tight end one. I just don't know if he's in position right now in the scheme to get to that elite level. In a different offense, it might be a different conversation.
I know Mike agrees with this, but I think the good news here is that the cost is such that it's such a low risk play compared to where last year was, right? Yeah. Last year you were using a top 25 pick on Kyle Pitts, hoping he could challenge Travis Kelce or at least Mark Andrews, one of the most elite tight ends in all of fantasy football, for as bad as it was last year. And make no mistake about it, it was bad. Once he got hurt or prior to his injury, Pitts was 7th in tight end targets, 11th in tight end receiving yards. So I know that neither of those numbers are the kind that you're hoping for out of a guy that was the 4th overall pick in the draft, but now he is going 7th amongst all tight ends at the top of the 8th round in 10-team leagues. So rather than paying full freight for Kyle Pitts, you're getting him probably closer to in line with where he should be in drafts right now, like behind the likes of Dallas Goedert and George Kittle, ahead of the likes of Evan Ingram and Pat Freiermuth. That seems to me like a reasonable cost. I have decided that, I am going to be, we used this phrase previously, I'd rather be a year too late than a year too early on expecting Travis Kelce or Derrick Henry to decline.
Yep.
I might be 2 to 4 weeks too early to state that, Kyle Pitts is all the way back if he has a hot start, because this offense, as Mike referenced, is so low volume. And I still don't know exactly what Desmond Ridder is going to be as an NFL quarterback. But I think Kyle Pitts has now settled into a spot where the risk is largely offset by the price.
Yeah. And when you consider the mid to back end tight end one options, doesn't it feel like 6th or 7th is his floor? For Kit Pitts,
it's close.
We're probably
drafting
him at his floor. And what? He might have more, he might be more likely.
How do you say that?
What?
We saw his floor be lower than that last year.
His volume is good.
Volume is good in a very low volume.
Based on his skill level and the target share he saw last season, even if it sounded a little bit, that he's going to be tight end 13 points per game?
Let's go to points per game last year.
I just have a hard time believing that a player that's entering his prime years with his skills, with that target share last season, with already is a 1,000-yard season.
It's about the offense. Arthur Smith still, use him, Mike. That's what it is for
me. Think about the guys in the back end there. Guys that, Dallas Goedert, Pat Freiermuth, these guys have a hard time clearing 5 touchdowns.
They don't have
George
the upside.
Before last year.
I'll give you Kyle Pitts has way more upside than those guys.
I just think it's unlikely that he's not a tight end one. I think it's unlikely.
Yeah, I'm sort of recusing myself from too much Kyle Pitts optimism just because got stung pretty hard. I like him at cost right now. I have no problem with that. I will be pleasantly surprised if he delivers a top 5 or top 8 tight end season.
Yeah, the only reason
top 5 because I haven't ranked as tight end 7. Yeah,
The only reason I don't draft him more is because you can get Darren Waller a round or two later, he's just a better value. But if I'm going to take one earlier or Waller comes off the board early, I would gladly grab Kyle Pitts.
All right, well, he's not the only pass catcher in this offense field. We saw that, and Mike's been talking about it, huge target share for Kyle Pitts, but they're not a heavy volume passing offense. Yeah. Can Drake London potentially have some second-year breakout potential in this offense?
So we did see sort of a late surge from Drake London from weeks 14 through 18. He was 17th in receptions and 16th in receiving yards. That was the last 5 weeks of the season. So that was good. And this
basically
is a player. Yeah. And like he rules, right? This was the 8th overall pick, very justifiably a year ago. I loved this stat that he was the Pac-12, which RIP, I guess. The Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year back in 2021, the fall of 2021. Yes, fall of 2021. And he got hurt like on Halloween that season and still won Offensive Player of the Year because he was damn good during his final college season. I think the world of him as a player. The question I think you have to ask yourself, and Mike raised this with Miles Sanders, is what's the upside for Drake London here, right? Because you're an extremely run-heavy offense. A quarterback that's a major question mark. Now, the good news is that it should go up compared to where it was last year. The Falcons were 31st in off-target percentage of throws last season. Obviously, Marcus Mariota was the starter for much of last year. I think Desmond Ridder will be better, but how much better is he than Marcus Mariota? I just don't have like a significant sample size that tells me for sure he's way better. Yes, he was the quarterback for much of when Drake London got hot last season, but I just think because of the fact that this team could easily lead the NFL in rushing attempts and certainly running back rushing yards this year, like, is there a top 15 outcome for Drake London unless he just totally crushes it in the touchdown department?
That's what I was going to say.
Exactly. I'm having a hard time with him at ADP. I think he's generally going in 12 teamers, like in the fifth round.
Yeah.
And I can't see it. Like, I'm 31st on my board. He was 12th in yards per out run as a rookie last year. He was fourth in target share. It's just the low volume is crushing. And he's not the only guy, too. They're going to, you know, in addition to the running backs, Kyle Pitts will be featured in this offense, right? So it's
Bijan as a runner. It just feels think about how far the Falcons would have to come offensively for Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts and Drake London to mash during the same season.
Yeah.
That feels like a long ways away from a team.
Desmond Ridder would have to crush.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. They would need that big leap. They would have to make a big leap, and they would have to balance out the offense as a result. And that's a possibility, but I didn't see that from Ridder. Not to mention he fell to the third round last year. There's no reason to be, you know, to expect that as the likely outcome here.
I don't love when we fall back on these phrases, but I mentioned it with the Panthers. Like, every team in this division can go into the season thinking if we play stellar defense and run the crap out of the ball, we can make the playoffs. And the Falcons spend about as much money as anybody this offseason on defense. Like, they could legitimately be an above average defense, run the crap out of the ball, and win 9-10 games this year and maybe challenge for a playoff spot. That could work for them this year. So it just feels like,
it almost worked. They almost
I've been watching. Have you guys watched Quarterback on Netflix yet?
I've watched a few
part of it, right? Yeah. Like, just as you get through it, you're just like, wow, you forget this Falcons team last year. Like, somehow they stayed competitive until like 2/3 of the way through the season, like pretty miraculously.
That was one of the
a better team on paper this year.
And they did it through the running game because the defense wasn't good. And they were actually a pretty efficient offense, more so than you think, even with Mariota, because of the run game. Which made it a little head-scratching that they drafted a running back in the top 10, because that was not a problem area. They literally were first in rushing yards by running backs last year, and it was effective.
All right, you know, that's there we go. Like, that's what I need to be reminded of, to be like, okay, they have to go all in on Bijan. Because they didn't need him, and they took him. Come on, people. Like, make it happen.
That's where, and I know you guys are saying this, but, like, everything about these stats for Drake London and Kyle Pitts feels, like, pseudo-misleading. Like, he was Drake London was fifth in target share. But when it's such a run-heavy team.
Yeah, that number is definitely misleading.
I'll give it to you. 29% target share was fourth highest, but he was 21st in targets.
Which is
right. I think we've made that point, though, right? It's misleading.
I was digging through old Eagles statistics because, like, in preparation for the Miles Sanders conversation today, and I missed his – I thought he was a rookie in 2018. It was actually 2019, and so I was looking at the rushing leaders, and it was Josh Adams with like 432 yards. You can be he was the Eagles' leading rusher, and he would have been like, you know, like whatever, 57th in the overall NFL. So yes, he was the fifth. He had the fifth highest target share, did Drake London, but it was still a much lower number. There were guys who were probably like, you know, 27th in target share that had way more targets than Drake London.
Yep. All right. We're going to keep on moving through the NFC South in a minute. But first, Field Yates.
How would you love it? Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance?
Yes, I would.
Of course you guys would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help, like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
Mike's trying to vigorously.
Yeah, it's like I'm undoing. So
I'm ever, so glad you saw it.
Do you ever go to your email and you like scan a bunch of emails and then you just select them all and then hit delete? But right when I did that, another one popped up and it disappeared. So I was trying to figure out.
So you're trying
I just
to
deleted,
shake to undo.
I thought I was shaking to undo. I thought I got an important email from Field Yates. So I was checking, but I did see while I was looking at this, while you're doing the read, I was looking at the news. We got news from Adam Schefter. Speaking of former Eagles, Jason Peters coming back for season 20.
Wants to play.
Wow. 20. He's going to try and sign somewhere and play. So that's
awesome. Amazing.
Yeah. What a career.
He's awesome.
That's unreal to play. I feel like that many seasons at that position.
And he's had
too.
So many injuries too. Yeah. And he's had to battle through and he just keeps coming back every year and playing well.
Yep. Incredible. All right. Let's talk about the New Orleans Saints. Last year, they were 7-10, negative 15-point differential. Things should be different this year, though, Field Yates, because they have a guy named Derek Carr under center, hoping that this is going to make this offense run a little bit smoother this year. But one of those questions on the offense is Alvin Kamara has been suspended for 3 games. If it had been a bigger suspension, we'd have a longer conversation. But 3 games feels like a pretty easy thing for us fantasy managers to overcome at the beginning of the season. You should have plenty of reasons to be able to draft Alvin Kamara and fill in someone else for those first couple games. How are you approaching him with this suspension?
Yeah, so no matter what running back strategy you take, you're going to be able to find 2 serviceable options to hold over for 3 weeks, whether you go heavy on running backs early, whether you go hero RB, zero RB strategy, whatever it is, you can find 2 serviceable bodies for those first 3 weeks. So I think the conversation then becomes, like, how much of a discount are you going to get on Alvin Kamara, and what kind of player is he going to be when he returns? He's going to end up going probably closer to, like, RB25 in drafts once we get to the heat of draft season. ADP data, I think, becomes a little more reflective of reality. The question that I have about Alvin Kamara is, are the days of like peak upside over for Alvin Kamara? I'm starting to wonder if that's the case.
In PPR? I don't know about that.
But peak upside.
Oh, like top 3? Yeah, I think so.
But
yeah,
maybe even more like top 8 running top back eight. Seasons from Alvin Kamara. Here's the questions that I have. Over the past 2 seasons, Alvin Kamara has 104 catches. That's 8th amongst running backs. That's totally serviceable, mm-hmm. right? And that what that does is it sets a very legitimate floor, mm-hmm. right? Like in the first 4 seasons of his career, he had 326 catches. That was the most by a decent amount amongst all running backs, right? So like there was the peak. And then as the rushing efficiency is concerned, over the past 2 seasons, he has the 9th most rushes in the NFL. Remember, early in his Saints career, he was not rushing the football 200 times a season. He has become more that workhorse over the past couple of seasons, and he has just 6 rushes for at least 20 yards over the past 2 seasons. So while he's 9th in the NFL in carries, he's 34th in the league in rushes of at least 20 yards. So I feel like maybe...
That's so weird. He's such an explosive player. Doesn't it feel like that number should be higher?
But do we think he's as explosive now? He certainly was not explosive last year as he was in prior seasons. I referenced the great Nick Underhill article earlier this offseason about how he thinks he may have tapped into some of the reasons why the explosiveness went away and how it might be better this year. But this is one of my, like, under-the-radar questions surrounding Alvin Kamara and fantasy football this year is, like, have the days of peak value gone behind him?
Well, he is. What age is he?
28, baby.
He's 28. He? That's your number. Yeah, he is. He's 28 years old. So you would expect him to take a dive in production and efficiency. I will say this. He has missed games. By the way, I want to answer your question first. I think like RB8, yeah, probably his ceiling. So I tend to agree. Like, I don't think he's going to be a guy we're ranking as a top 5 option. But can he be RB8 or RB12 sort of in that range on a week-to-week basis? Yes, and I have him projected for 10 to 12 carries and 4 to 6 targets per game, which I think's perfectly reasonable and conservative, and that's going to be enough in PPR to be in that RB1 conversation. But check this out. He has missed games 5 straight seasons. This is rookie year. He's missed games at least every year. He has still finished top 5 at running back in targets and top 12 in yards. not per game, total, all five of those seasons. Yeah. So that just shows you the floor he really brings to the table and why just a three-game suspension, I have been taking him at ADP. You know, he was in the eighth round. He's starting to climb up a little bit. I agree. We'll kind of see where he settles. Could be fifth, sixth
round. Let's talk about that. Hold on. I do want to interrupt you because you said eighth round, and you said ADP should settle in around 25.
Yeah.
Right now. Right now, he's going as running back 17. That number is rising.
Okay.
That's an RADP.
On so RADP, coming off the board with the 55th pick. So
that's
55!
That can be, yeah, that can be 55 what?
55 picks.
55 picks.
55 picks.
55 picks.
55 burgers.
But, okay, I mean, so. You're talking sixth round, mid-sixth round there in ESPN drafts.
55 beignets.
It's tricky. Yeah, sometimes I think that is a little bit driven by where they're ranked in our draft room a little bit.
Well, we should talk to the guy who ranks those guys.
Yeah, I know that. That's why I don't. That's why I often reference other ADP, because you want to, like, this is where they're going in our draft rooms. It's fine. But sometimes if there's a lot of people watching who are getting ready for their live draft in person.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but not all of those people will have our cheat sheets. You know, I don't think that's I don't think that's a smart move, but some people are going to have cheat sheets from other places, and they need to know where these guys might go. So I do think he will go a little bit lower than that. By the way, one interesting nugget here, which is there's a quarterback change.
Yeah.
And you might be wondering, well, is Derek Carr going to throw it to him as often? Check this out. Last year, Josh Jacobs had fewer than 100 yards less than Alvin Kamara. He was within 100 receiving yards of Alvin Kamara last season.
Oh, they smashed.
Carr threw it to Jacobs a ton in Las Vegas last season. So I'm not saying Jacobs is as good as him, but it just shows you that Carr not afraid to dump it off. He'll be doing that to Kamara a ton this season.
Kamara is definitely the pass catcher in that as the running back in that offense. It's not going to be going to Jamal Williams. Nope. Is there any question mark about Jamal Williams potentially being able to take away too much goal line work to affect either Alvin Kamara or give him potential standalone flex value like he saw in Detroit?
I don't think he's going to be a flex option just because he was struggling. It was all touchdowns last season. And a lot of carry. He had a career high in carries by far. I think aside of the first 3 weeks, I think Williams will have a hard time cracking the RB2 conversation. Maybe a non-PPR flex or fringe top 25 guy, but not a guy I'm going out of my way to pick. Not to mention Kendre Miller should be involved those first 3 weeks as well.
Not a beignet guy, by the way, Jamal Williams.
That's right. He's
But worst photo of all time.
Which the beignet Matthews photo?
That's like a sneaky great.
That was
a
legendary. Yeah.
That was so good. One of those, like, I always say that Instagram is like the, like, you know, the 0.1% best photos on your phone, right? And so it's like, yeah, I'm about to go filter this thing. It's going to be so good. I'm going to get it into focus and, like, I'm going to, you know, get a little bit of extra lighting on it. Like, take four or five different shots to make sure I can survey the best of those four or five shots. And then Matthew literally came up with the worst photo of all.
While he was walking past the table.
And, like, it was
just post.
It was great. I love it. Oh, my gosh. All right. Let's talk about this. Shout out to you, Matthew. We miss you, buddy. All right. Field Yates.
Yep.
There was one wide receiver that won Offensive Rookie of the Year. It probably shouldn't have because I think it should have been this guy instead. Are you in on Chris Olave this season?
All right. We need to rename him. Chris, all in Olave.
Chris, all in Olave.
Field's favorite comes out next week. We'll probably talk about this guy a whole lot again. You know him. He's awesome, right? You are correct that Garrett Wilson won Offensive Rookie of the Year. His Ohio State teammate, Chris Olave, did not. But Chris Olave did have the most fantasy points per game amongst all rookie wide receivers. And moreover, this is one of my favorite stats. Over the past 15 seasons, the top five rookies in yards per route run. A.J. Brown, Justin Jefferson,
good.
Odell Beckham Jr.,
also good.
Ja'Marr Chase,
great.
And Chris Olave, number five.
That's a big list.
Okay, I'm not saying
you're
that all these stats.
I feel like I'm too low on him suddenly.
Yeah. I'm not saying that every stat guarantees success going forward, but I think it's indicative of a player who's got an incredible skill set. Chris Olave is the real deal. He has been the talk of the town at Saints training camp.
Yes, he has.
Dominating training camp for the Saints this year. A quarterback upgrade. Dalton was not terrible last year, right? But I think they're getting an obvious upgrade. Olave led the NFL in air yards last season, which is one of those stats that, as Mike mentioned, like, sometimes, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling might have been pretty high in air yards last year, but his volume was super low. You're going to see vertical shots down the field for Chris Olave. You're going to see stuff near the line of scrimmage. You're going to see intermediate passing game. You're going to see it all. He is one of the, to me, the most obvious breakout players in all of fantasy football this year. I think a lot of the rhetoric that we've been using surrounding Garrett Wilson applies to Chris Olave. He will be the captain of Fields' favorites this year.
Wow.
He is the player that I am leaving with more than any other player in drafts this year.
Wow. Love that. Top seven in average depth of the target, but also yards per route run. So he's vertical, but he's also seeing he's being targeted when he runs routes.
Totally.
Fantasy points per snap as well. Top seven in all those categories with a 27% target share as a rookie. He was 26 on a points per game basis. And fantasy points, why? Here's the only thing they need to fix. He was 68th at wide receiver in snaps.
So snaps, yeah, that's not going to be the same this year, right?
No, absolutely not.
No way.
And that number is going to go up, and he's going to be more productive this season. So his efficiency may come down, but the volume is going to go up.
I'm all in.
By the way, the latest reports I saw, we're going to talk about this, guys, so this will be a kind of move us along here, but a segue. That's what that's called.
Oh, it's a segue. There we go, Mike.
The reports are, you're right, Olave, superstar.
Like dominating.
Michael Thomas reports are not prime Michael Thomas anymore. That's again, I'm not at camp. That's just what reports are saying.
Of course. Yep.
Anyway.
So last year, Michael Thomas only played three games. Actually, and just to go back to the beginning, in case you haven't played fantasy football for a while, Michael Thomas started his career with four straight top 10 finishes at the position and has played just 10 games over the last two seasons. It's such a difficult thing to be able to figure out, Mike, because with this, it's like we watched the guy literally be one of the best wide receivers in the NFL.
Literally the best for 1 year.
For a
his last full season, he was. Yeah.
And then these last two seasons, it's like, man, we don't know who Michael Thomas is. Now with Chris Olave here, like, what are you doing with Michael Thomas?
Can I give you a stat really quick before we get into this?
Of course, love that.
We speak about Justin Jefferson in very deserved ways right now. Mm-hmm. Most catches and most receiving yards through three seasons in NFL history.
Yep.
Just rewind this back in time. Through four seasons, Michael Thomas had more catches and more receiving yards than any other player in NFL history. Can you imagine a scenario where like 4 years from now, we're like, remember that guy, Justin Jefferson, who was good back in the day? It just seems unfathomable, right?
That's a great point.
Where we are now, I guess is low, sorry, visually. Yeah. Where we are now versus where we were 4 years ago or whatever it was, Michael Thomas's fourth year. That's wild to me.
Yeah.
Insane.
So Field saying Justin Jefferson's a bust. We should trade him now. Don't draft him.
Someone's a video team. Can we get that one clipped, please? Clip it.
Are you in? I mean, is Michael Thomas worth a potential late round flyer knowing what he has been in the past?
You know what? I have him 38th, and I think he's fine in the late rounds. There's sometimes where he's the top receiver left on my board. Look, last year, through three games, he was wide receiver 16. He had three touchdowns, and he came out strong. So
he did.
He wanted Derek Carr there. He wants to be in New Orleans again. I don't know if that was necessarily the case last year. It's not the worst. He's 30, right? It's not 33, 34. Like, he's still 30. There's a chance that he's at least a flex option or a wide receiver three. So
scan to the running backs listening to the show right now. They're like, wait, Michael Thomas is 30, not 33, 34. Mike's right? Like, you know, he's a spring chicken. Meanwhile, I'm 28. It's like, well,
get that guy out of here.
You know,
he's still in the league? What?
Yeah, I know. Seriously, right? Like, oh man. I've got him as wide receiver 47. I'm a little bit, I just think that at that point of the draft, there are just so many scintillating rookies that I'm like, oh, I'd rather throw that dart against Jackson Smith and Jigba or somebody like
Jordan
that.
Jordan Addison. You know, yeah,
that's totally fine.
Addison, I'm a different category there.
Totally.
I'm delirious.
Rashid Shaheed hype too. You know, he played pretty well last season.
He did.
You know, if Thomas does stumble or gets beat up, he's the guy that could make a second year leap as well.
Great piece by Kat Durrell, our awesome Saints reporter, about the Shaheed family. They're like all sprinters. I didn't know that. They're just all extremely fast, which
that's where it comes from.
Kind of how it works, you know?
I didn't get those.
That's my story.
Did you get from your family? Because I didn't get the fast ones. That's not a thing that I got from mine.
And my dad's about to turn 76 in a week, and he's still got great hair. I'm hoping that's
you
the one that
I have. Okay. Great hair. You should have it for a long time.
What about you?
Yeah. By the way, your dad, how old does your dad look as a 76-year-old?
Like 35.
Yeah, there you go.
My dad gets carded less than I do. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I got all my musical ability from my dad.
Oh, is that right?
That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah, and your handyman stuff.
Yeah, I do a lot of handyman stuff. It's fun.
Daniel, it's so weird. I'm in a group thread with Daniel from all of his home buddies, and they all call him Dan.
Everybody calls me Dan.
Yeah,
yeah.
What?
Dan was defending the den yesterday. I'm like, who the hell is Dan?
I would never know that was you.
Yeah.
Like Field, I know, right? We've talked about that. First name basis.
What are you going to call Dan?
Dan, I would need Dan.
What do you mean, Fee? What are you shorten Field to?
Yeah, no one calls me by my full name, Maximus Prime. They just call me Field.
And it's time to keep moving. All right. What about Juwan Johnson, Field Yates? Are you in on potentially having a tight end here from the Saints offense, or was he more of a flash in the pan last year?
Really, really, really good athlete and fun to watch with the football in his hands. I have concerns about the volume. I think he'll be a good red zone producer for them because he is such a good athlete. He's a converted wide receiver from his Penn State and Oregon days in college. But I'm concerned concerned. There are just a lot of bodies in that tight end room all of a sudden.
Yep.
I've got him as tight end 19.
I moved him down to tight end 18. I saw that I had him 14 on the list. I think that was too high with the guys I had behind him.
I'm down to 23rd. You've mentioned touchdowns. He had 7 last year. I think that number comes down with Taysom Hill being involved in that area. They brought in Foster Moreau, who's an underrated player, and they're going to set up plays for Jimmy Graham. He's probably going to make that roster.
Yeah, it sounds like he has a chance to.
And I think that's going to be his job is to catch, just catch touchdowns. Yeah. So.
Goal line fades only for Jimmy
Graham. I'm out on Johnson.
Mike, you told us you wanted to talk about this potentially number one rated Saints defense.
I'll make this quick, but just check this out. The Saints defense, these are the quarterbacks they play this season, right? Okay. Assuming they're healthy and the rookies play,
I'm looking at their schedule.
All right. Ryan Tannehill, Bryce Young twice, Desmond Ridder twice, Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask twice.
Okay.
Jordan Love, Mac Jones, CJ Stroud. Now we get to the tough part. Wow. Trevor Lawrence, Anthony Richardson, another rookie, Justin Fields, Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, Daniel Jones, Matt Stafford.
At least half of those games.
So you might say there's a couple decent names on there, but think about this. These are the quarterbacks they are not playing at all this season. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Deshaun Watson, pretty much all 10 fantasy quarterbacks.
You know what I got?
Dak Prescott, Tua, Aaron Rodgers, Geno Smith, Russell Wilson. They don't face any of those quarterbacks.
You know what? I figured out what you said you categorized. That first list was the up-and-comers. The second list was the overrated guys. Is that correct?
Wow.
Yes. Cut it.
Clip it.
There you go. That's it.
Yeah, so, if you're looking for, they're going to play the Saints week or the Titans week one, you're probably fine starting them there. And then the schedule is it's a breeze pretty much the whole season.
The season is a really nice schedule. Saints defense, someone maybe to target if you want to just wait in the defense. You should always wait in the defensive position. Don't ever take a defense.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, definitely one you can grab late and feel good about all year long. And you might be, we're going to get to this, but the Saints win total, if you're watching, you probably saw it was 9.5. And you're thinking, the same as Miami? Really? Is it 9.5? That's why.
The division
schedule
is so
why. They have the easiest schedule in the NFL.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yesterday, we covered it. This is now a Rashad White podcast, Mike Clay.
Yeah, it is.
What do you have to say? Was there any further hate from any
of
our people?
Do you want to defend your honor or no?
Did I not do that yesterday?
Well, you did it by yourself. I can add to that if you'd
like. Okay, go ahead.
I think the question, here's the question on Rashad White, is that we saw him last season. He had the fourth fewest yards per carry amongst all players with at least 100 carries in 2022. Mm-hmm. Is that a Rashad White stat, or is that more an offensive line stat, which was a total mess last year for Tampa Bay?
For the record, Leonard Fournette's rushing efficiency, very similar.
I think he was third fewest.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
So it sounds like it might very well have been a Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive line stat. Well, things during this time of the year generally do feel more optimistic across the board in the NFL. The Bucs offensive line this offseason, they traded away Shaq Mason, a guy at right guard who has been a very good player for a long time. And as of right now, Ryan Jensen, their Pro Bowl / All-Pro left center, is not practicing. The team did joint practices with the Jets this week, and Jensen just stayed behind. I think he's getting more treatment. So are we certain that this offensive line is much improved?
No.
Moreover, I think Rashad White's a solid prospect. Third round pick, though, right? This is not a guy who came in with immense amount of pedigree. And I think part of the roster construction from the Bucs right now is simply that this team had a tighter budget than anybody in the NFL this entire offseason. Part of the reason why I don't think they made a play for a Zeke or a Dalvin Cook or maybe even eventually a Kareem Hunt is that they have literally no money left to spend. They are capped out. And you know why? Because they won the freaking Super Bowl by acquiring Tom Brady and going all in for multiple seasons. It's totally justifiable. But I don't know that in a perfect scenario, this is how they wanted to construct the running back room. So I can see why there are some legitimate red flags here. The counterpoint, as Mike dove into yesterday, are that it's the thinnest depth chart in the NFL. He seems primed for a big workload, and he's a legit pass catcher. Rashad White caught the ball very effectively last year. They're not going to throw it nearly as much to the running backs this season, but that does help create a bit of a floor.
Yeah, pass volume will be way down in the post-Tom Brady era.
Not just to the running backs, to everybody. Yes,
absolutely. He was 11th in catches last season as a rookie, which even in a high-volume offense, impressive that he was involved that much. So
especially because Leonard Fournette was, fourth?
Yeah, he was up there as well. Yeah,
they threw 72 or 73 receptions.
Yeah, Brady set the completion record last year, so that would help. But we did see him. There was one game Leonard Fournette missed, and they said, okay, we'll give Rashad White the lead back job. He played 91% of the snaps, 14 carries, caught all 9 of his targets, had over 100 scrimmage yards in that game. And I agree. Because it's Chase Edmonds and Keyshawn Vaughn and the undrafted Sean Tucker, and they're not going to add someone else most likely, the thought process here probably is, let's give this kid an opportunity to be the lead guy, and all indications are that will be the case. So if he struggles and averages 3.7 yards per carry, he might do that in 250 carries and catch 40, 50 balls and be a solid RB2. And if he's the real deal and a star and the team stays healthy, he could be in the RB1 conversation. So I like him a lot as a breakout player. He's one of my favorite RB2 targets. But at the same time, it is he's inexperienced and the depth is a concern, and they are one of the shakier units on paper. The shakiest unit on paper, most unproven unit on paper in the NFL as things stand today.
You had a stat similar to this, boss man. I'm going to throw one out there, too. Boss man. Like this.
It's my name, man.
Rashad White, you're talking about when he was able to get the volume. He had four game stretch where he had at least 15 touches in every single one of those four game stretches. He averaged 14.5 fantasy points per game. That would have been running back 13 on the year. Yeah. By the way,
I wonder how many of those were catches, though.
I don't care.
I do, because targets are just so much more valuable than carries. And last year they were basically the dink and dunk offense of, I guess, like NFL history, right? Like, I don't know that I've ever seen an offense that was so horizontally inclined. They couldn't protect Brady at all. It was snap, get the ball out.
Yeah, I agree with you, but at the same time, let's sort out who's most likely to lead this team in targets. Probably Chris Godwin would be first.
Yep.
Mike Evans would be second. White could be third, especially with Russell Gage on IR. He's done for the year. Yeah. David Moore might be the favorite for the three job right now. Rakeem Jarrett, there's a couple of guys competing. Kate Otten's a candidate for that. But Rashad White very easily could finish third on this team.
You know, the best part is that, like, we're having to defend Mike's honor. We all have as an RB2.
I know. Yeah. Like, I know. I love it.
Like, we all like Rashad White.
We're going to have a lot of Rashad White. It's just that, you know, if you had to stack up the best. Or I don't know. Mike had to do this. He had to stack up the running back rooms around the NFL, and many
fantasy,
of them are
NFL.
Very deep, and the Bucs are not.
Yep,
that's exactly right.
All right, I want to close out with this one, Field. I thought this was really good. I want to give you some roses here. You had asked this question while we were talking about in our pre-show meeting.
Yep.
Last year, we had this conversation. We were like, you know what? Geno Smith is going to be the quarterback of the Seahawks. We're out on DK. DK is going to suck this year. Tyler Lockett, we're not going to do that. And then they turned in really great performances because the quarterback play was actually serviceable and quite a bit better than what we thought.
Yeah.
This year, you called this, it kind of feels like that's the same exact thing that's happening with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Well, that's the question that I have, is will the exact same thing happen? Will Baker Mayfield / Kyle Trask? It sounds like Baker's probably got the inside track to start week one, and we'll see how long that lasts for. Can they be this year's version of the Seahawks? Because we overlook them all offseason. And I think at some point you have to remember that, like, great players just produce. And Chris Godwin is a great player. Over the past four seasons, he has 353 catches. That is sixth in the NFL. Mike Evans, over the past four seasons, has 41 receiving touchdowns. That is second in the NFL. Only Devontae Adams has more. So I don't want to go too far with my displeasure for these players, because I think that I've said this before. Mike Evans is a future Hall of Famer, and Chris Godwin is a stone cold stud. So that's the balancing act you have right now with these two wide receivers.
But it's just about the quarterback position, right? We were out on the Seahawks wide receivers last year because we were like, the quarterback is not going to be good. Is Baker going to be able to sustain what that potential? You
know, the only thing I want to push back on that, though, is that when we went in, very similar to this, and I'll get to it in a second, but going into last offseason, that was our concern, right? Like, big quarterback drop off, we thought, in efficiency, and we dropped those guys in our rankings. But they ended up being values, and they were easy to draft, a lot like Josh Jacobs, how it was like, all right, initially there were some concerns there, but then his ADP fell, and we liked him at cost by the end of the offseason.
That's
fair. It was the same thing with Godwin and Mike Evans last season, and that's how I feel about Seattle right now.
Okay.
Tampa Bay right now, and all the early months, February, March, April, we were talking about this. Wow, we're like really low, and you know, Mike Evans has never not been top 25, and we're like, 26th, 28th, they were really low. And then you start seeing ADP and doing drafts and doing mocks, and suddenly you're like, they're falling way too far. Suddenly I want Mike Evans and Chris Godwin at cost.
That's happening right now. Yeah,
absolutely.
I want to tell you this. Right now, Mike Evans coming off the board as wide receiver 24 in the 7th round. Chris Godwin coming off the board as wide receiver 26th in the 8th round. We actually have that flipped. We have Chris Godwin definitely ranked ahead of Mike Evans. I'm surprised right now that the community sees Evans as a wide receiver. They'd rather take over Chris Godwin.
Do you feel that way? I mean, I think I prefer Godwin just because, at least in recent seasons, he had become the volume king, right? I mean, there was a time earlier in Chris Godwin's career where he was more like a 14 or 15 yards per catch guy, but my guess would be that the Bucs, especially with the injured Russell Gage, would continue to lean very heavily on Chris Godwin as that slot monster.
Yeah, Godwin's been top 15 on a points-per-game basis four straight seasons.
He's good at football.
Yeah, he is.
And, you know, here's the truth. Baker is a very easy guy to dunk on. First overall pick, brash, a lot of bravado, you know, planted the flag in the Ohio State-Oklahoma game. Like, he's an easy guy to not love.
Yeah.
But he played serviceable football for the Rams on, like, no notice last year. Maybe he was claimed off of waivers and played Thursday night of that week. So, like, you know, it's not totally unfathomable that Baker could play a full season and be solid enough.
Here's a question for you. All right, we didn't talk about any of the quarterbacks as fantasy options. Who's the most likely, like, deep flyer to be fantasy relevant
in this division?
Yeah,
Desmond Ridder.
Yeah, I agree.
Best runner
is rushing. Yeah.
He's my deep sleeper for quarterbacks.
Highest floor We're is Derek Carr, but Derek Carr's never been top 10 in his career.
Yeah,
he's the safest highest floor in, like, a super flex league. Yep. I agree with you on Ridder though, because of he didn't really run last year, but he definitely is the highest ceiling.
I mean, he was a great runner in college. He is. We are doing a sleepers, bust, and breakout show on Monday,
Ooh,
and
fun.
I might have just spilled the beans on my quarterback sleeper.
All right, so let's look at this. The Bucks have a 6.5 win projection. Mike Clay, are you taking the over or under on 6.5 wins?
Very close on this one. 6.4, so I'll stay away.
I'll say under.
Under. Field under, obviously not making the playoffs then. Okay. Let's talk about the Saints, 9.5 win total.
Over
on that one.
I'm over. I think they get to 10 and win this division because of the schedule.
Same.
Division winners. Mm-hmm. All right, Falcons at 8.5 wins. Do they best that this year, Mike Clay?
Under. 7.4. Big gap for me.
Yeah, I'm going 8, so under.
Under there as well. Wow. Okay, guys. I might take the over on that. Okay. No, it's 8. That's 9 wins. 9 wins?
I just don't. I have to see it from
Nobody knows.
That's a lot. All right, and then the Panthers, 7.5 wins with Bryce Young under center.
Under.
Under. Yep. Under 7 wins for me, 7.1.
All right, agreed more than I liked right there, Mike.
We've only got one team making the playoffs out of this division.
Correct.
Which,
it's a very, very weak division.
We have to get the Lions in there somehow. So.
Oh, I didn't need that, Mike.
Wow, parting shot from Mike Clay. You're not bad.
At least they're being talked about as a playoff team now, okay?
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, by good analysts. All right, we want to thank you guys for hanging out with us today and hanging out all week with us. Hopefully you caught the Fantasy Football Marathon. If for some reason you still want to check out the mock draft we did in the Fantasy Marathon, it was a ton of fun. Check it out on the ESPN on NFL YouTube page.
Yeah, yeah.
But for Field and Mike, my name is Daniel. We love you guys. Don't forget to love each other. Be kind to yourself. Have an awesome weekend. Wear sunscreen. We'll see you on Monday.
Best weekend ever. So you should have. Hey, great radio show, by the way.
By the way, you guys didn't ask me what skill I got from my dad.
What skill did you get from your dad?
So he was a really good race car driver, one of the best in Pennsylvania, and I'm a racing fan.
Hey-o!
Beard, I'm telling you.